high up in the mountains, Sam saw a white star twinkle for a while. The beauty of it smote his heart as he looked up out of the forsaken land, and hope returned for him. For like a shaft clear and cold, the thought pierced him that in the end the shadow was only a small and passing thing. There was a light and high beauty forever beyond its reach. And that passage is it's so stark, because the chapter all around it is so heavy and dark and bleak. And then there's just this moment where he sees the star.
Sanderson has a version of that quote, which I'm going to read. Sanderson, it's not actually in a book. It's in an essay. He has to write a whole essay to get to this last two sentences in long-winded Sanderson fashion. But Sanderson's version of that sentiment is, when you find yourself in the cold, know that sometimes there's a purpose to it. Trust me, I've been there. I might be there right now, feeling the cold on my cheeks, but these days no longer in my bones, knowing that this will pass, and that it might be for my good. Most of all, looking up so I can appreciate it, the still, solemn perspective of one who stands outside. Welcome back to Following Noadon, a Stormlight podcast. We have a special Christmas episode today. Paul, how are you?
Fantastic. Merry Christmas, everybody. I think it's really cool that we get to release something on Christmas Day. So, yeah.
Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing amazing. I love this time of year. Family gathering around, Christmas, hot chocolate. I'm a sucker for a good hot cup of hot chocolate with some marshmallows in it. My little boys are too. They'll like pile their hot chocolate, you know, so tall that it's more marshmallows than it is hot chocolate, you know, and it's fun. Good times.
Yeah. I just finished watching It's a Wonderful Life with my family. So a little sentimental over here. Okay.
Classic.
This is a Christmas special, and the purpose of this episode, in short, this episode is a topical discussion between us three on what fantasy means to us and how it has shaped each of us both spiritually and personally. If any of what we discuss sparks any conversation in comments, we're happy to have it. But without further ado, Elliot, what are we discussing today?
Yeah, I'm super excited about this topic. I've actually been wanting to talk about this for quite a while now, and the three of us have brought this up for a little while and have talked about it and wanted to get into it a little bit more to talk about, you know, some of the deeper elements of some of our personal lives and our personal experiences and our personal beliefs and how they tie into the works of fantasy that we get into. The books that we read, Stormlight, all of Sanderson really touches on this. And if you listen to this podcast for any amount of time, you know that we ramble on Tolkien for quite a bit, and I guarantee you Tolkien's going to come up in this episode probably quite a bit. But as we read those stories, that, you know, inspire us, that take us to a new world, I think there's a lot of times where it really, those stories impact us on a deep level. They really take us to some of those core foundational ways that we view ourselves or we view the world, and they make us kind of ask some of those tougher questions or really explore what do I believe about this? Am I okay with what this character just did? You know, if that were to happen to me, how would I react to that? Could I ever forgive a character for doing something terrible, not naming any names, Moash? And, you know, those kinds of big life questions that come up. And We don't get into this a lot in our main episodes, although I think we've touched on it at some times and we probably will again. So we wanted to take this episode to kind of dedicate to going deeper and laying kind of an understanding of what our personal beliefs are and kind of where we're coming at some of these characters from. And so with that, I think we'll kind of jump into a few different questions and things about how we approach these, what the stories, you know, mean to us. I have some more thoughts that will kind of kick us off here in a second, but we wanted to start off with kind of laying the foundation of what is it that we believe? Where do the three of us sit spiritually and religiously, I guess? And so for that, I think Paul's got kind of a quick rundown to kind of tell everybody where we're coming from.
Yeah, exactly. And first, I just want to say briefly, if you're someone who has listened to us for a couple weeks or a couple years, this doesn't necessarily change anything about how our normal show will go. But if you're tuning in, you know, this is just something that we're personally very passionate about. But yeah, we've kind of written up a statement. So I'm just going to read it. And this is really how we feel and what we wanted to share. We are Christian. We believe and know that there is one true God existing in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who in the beginning created everything out of nothing, who made man in his image, and by design gave humanity free will. Humanity sinned, and doing so fell short of the glory of God. But by God's grace, he sent his Son Jesus to be crucified on a cross, paying a price for our sins which we could not pay. Then, rising from the grave 3 days later in triumph over death, so that those who believe in him may be saved and spend eternity with God. It's quite special that we get to do this on Christmas. I know whatever probably historians say, this is not the day, the exact day, calendar day that Jesus was born. But we're here to talk about faith and fantasy stories and how we, you know, can learn that how they can, in a way, learn from each other. You know, how we learn a lot of these virtues and things with it. And we thought it'd be fun to release on Christmas too. So, yeah. Without further ado, I think the first thing that we were going to talk about was how does reading fantasy shape our personal real world beliefs? Reading these fantasy books impact that. And how does our beliefs shape how we read fantasy and vice versa?
I think when I think about the two side by side, my experiences with fantasy stories, whether it's Lord of the Rings, whether it's The Way of Kings, and I kind of think about that alongside my spiritual beliefs, the first thing I jump to is that kind of fact that there's good and evil out there. And that's something that's very clear in fantasy most of the time, where you've got the good guys and the bad guys, or the morally gray guys as well. But I immediately start equating that to real life as well. I believe there's light and there's dark in the real world as well. There's heroes, there's villains, there's terrible things that happen, catastrophes, and there's beautiful moments where people step into the catastrophe and love someone and sacrifice themselves for them. Those kinds of things really happen. And when I read fantasy, I look for those moments where's the courage? Where's the warrior of light? Like books, they take me there. They take me to that moment where I get to step into the shoes of the warrior fighting for good. And those are the moments that, you know, inspire me to be a better man. And I start to equate those to, well, how can I be the warrior of light in my day-to-day life, whether it's for my kids or whether it's for my wife, whether it's the people around me, whether it's the random stranger I bump into who's having a tough day. You know, those are the kind of moments where someone like a Kaladin who's giving his all to just help and lift the people around him kind of convicts me. It's like, I could be doing more of that, you know, kind of moments. But the power of story is what brings that thought to my mind and kind of sticks it there.
For me, it's all about putting myself in the shoes of whatever I'm reading or whoever I'm reading, whether that be the author or the character. I think I can learn about both the author and the character. But if I read a fantasy story about Kaladin and I see a decision that he makes that it really inspires me, I think to myself, would I make that decision? And if I don't make that decision, if I ask myself that question and I find myself saying, man, I don't know if I could have made that decision, then I've now learned something about myself. I can then go work on myself to then put myself in a place where I would make that decision. I believe that I've become a better person, a better father, a better husband by reading about other characters that may not even exist that make decisions that I wish I had made, and I then make it in the future.
Yeah, it's fun to see a lot of how these characters that we read about play out. We talk a lot about it with Tolkien. We'll definitely talk about that more. Of course, our podcast has covered Sanderson. But one of the things that I think is most impactful is there's a lot of these biblical virtues, which we will, of course, we will still be talking about more later on. But, you know, a lot of biblical themes that are true to the story that we've experienced in the Bible, in the story of Jesus, which is true and not fantasy, which inspires hope and inspires joy and things like that. Getting to see those themes in fantasy is a great way to learn about it. Even Jesus himself taught through parables in the Bible. And he says in Matthew 13, he's asked, why do you speak to us? Why do you talk to us in parables? He says, to you it has been given to know the secrets of heaven. There's just something about learning through story. The ways that you can, like, you could hear, someone could teach you hope, the definition of hope or the definition of faith is this, right? You could do that, you could take a test on it, but to see it lived out, to see courage and hope, faithfulness, goodness, all the fruits of the Spirit, to see those lived out through a lot of the characters that we follow is a lot more impactful, and I feel it gives much more of a personal understanding to those topics, which are not always easy to just read and understand and really take that to heart.
And Jesus uses that tool all the time. Like when you read the Gospels in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Jesus will get asked a question, and his response will be, well, let me tell you the story of, and he'll go straight into this, you know, parable. So many times he doesn't just give an answer where he lays it out. He gives a story, because I think he used the power of, I'm gonna show this to you, not just tell you about it. I mean, that's a classic, you know, storytelling. If you want to be a better author, better writer, better speaker, show, don't tell. And I think that's kind of what Jesus is doing with his parables, is he's saying, I'm gonna tell you a story about this, and you're gonna relate to it. You're gonna pick out moments of it that you identify with. You're gonna say, ooh, I know that guy, the story of the, like, prodigal son. Some people hear that story and they're like, oh man, prodigal son, that's me. I ran away, was doing the crazy stuff, and then I come home. Other people they identify with the father, and they're like, oh man, I've had someone who's left me and I was just dying for them to come back. And then other people identify with the older brother who's jealous of the younger brother who comes back and is welcomed back into the family after squandering everything. Like, there's elements for everybody in those stories. Jesus was really good at that. And I think any story, any well-written story, is going to do that for you. You're going to see bits of it and you go, oh man, that's me. That's me in that story. And you take something out of it.
Just kind of as an aside, I think Sanderson actually does that really well. Sanderson doesn't speak in parables, if you will. Well, I guess Witt does sometimes, but I think he does a good job of putting something in every scene for everyone. Sanderson actually talks about this. As he writes a scene, he writes the scene in order for it to be someone's favorite scene in the book. Doesn't matter who it is, each scene he's aiming at somebody specific, somebody different, for it to be their favorite scene in the book, which I think is really cool. Even if you don't have a character that really represents you in the scene, if you're reading a Sanderson book, the characters that he crafts do such a good job of showing real world struggle across the board. Doesn't matter really who you are, I just think that's something Sanderson does a really good job of. And one of the reasons this podcast started is I wanted to share those with Paul and Elliot.
Yeah, Sanderson does do a good job in his writing. One of the things I wanted to bring up big time is on this topic of, you know, how does reading fantasy affect our belief, and how do our beliefs affect us reading fantasy? So I love the Bible. The Bible is, you know, the word of God. And there's, as much as we dive into these series that we've read, Sanderson, Tolkien, there's so much significance that you get from reading a series whenever you've dove deep into the details. Sanderson and Tolkien were excellent authors of history, of connections between books, between worlds in Sanderson's case, the history in Tolkien's case. If you have read The Silmarillion and then you read Lord of the Rings, whenever they're singing these silly songs to Elbereth Gilthoniel, like, you know that that is one of the Valar, and there's a lot more significance that is applied to the story that you're reading because you know some of these figures that they mention offhandedly. So the same thing in Sanderson's work as well. But as much as you want to nitpick, pick apart details, dive into every single little word, the beauty of that I see connected there is the Bible is divinely inspired and written. And I posted a picture, which maybe we'll get to put up on the screen. Someone, I don't actually know who's the original creator of this image, but someone created an image to show the cross references throughout the Bible. There's so much richness. Obviously, we won't be covering the whole Bible on this thing. That would take way too long. But there's so much richness that is intentional. It was not mistaken. There's this aspect which I always hear called the golden thread. So we talk about the story of Jesus a lot, but this golden thread are the places that you see allusion and reference to Jesus before Jesus was born on earth, right? Jesus was in heaven with God, but even from Genesis 3, I believe, is where people point out the first reference. There's that. There's the prophet of Isaiah. There's so much that point to Jesus specifically, but not even just that. There's so many things. If you're ever curious to go down a rabbit trail, look up like the hyssop tree. There's like probably 15 connections to the hyssop tree, of it being used in the Passover, of it being used to give water to Christ on the cross. Like, there's so much connection to a hyssop branch. There's so much that is so interconnected that it is truly miraculous. It is truly spectacular. And so I think the special connection, I'm really going on a rant here, so sorry if y'all have thoughts. I'll be done shortly. One thing that's really great, whenever I read the Bible, there is inspiration, there is beauty, but frankly, myself, Paul, does not always want to just sit down and read through the Bible for fun. Like, just a leisurely afternoon, that's not what I'm going to spend all my time doing. However, fantasy is such a fun mode that gets me really engaged to read and to dive in. And I think as I've become a better reader myself through reading fantasy, that has also aided in diving into things like the Bible, which is true and deep. While it is fun to dig into all the details of the authors we cover, sometimes I am like, well, you know, sometimes you're like, I'm probably digging too far into the words that this author has written. But what I love about the Bible is that's not the case. So that's my spiel there.
Well, and that brings me to some thoughts I have on just like reading in general, which for me is like that element of self-discovery that comes with reading and like diving deep into something and finding the connections and digging into what can I take out of this? What can I apply from this? all those things that you can do with the Bible. You know, you, when you're rereading the Bible, at least when I'm rereading the Bible, I'm getting new stuff out of every single passage I'm reading. It's so full of thoughts and epiphanies and moments where it's like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know that before. And when I read a good book, for me, a good book is a book that's going to maybe not do that on the level of the Bible, but take me to that kind of space where I'm having to kind of examine myself. And even just through that act of putting a little more thought into the act of reading and kind of that exploration of what is going on here, where are the connections, what can I relate to in these various kind of interconnected plot lines and stories, that even just the act of going through that is going to teach you something about yourself. There's going to be a self-discovery that happens as you try and think through what you're reading through. And that's something I experience when I read the Bible. It's also something I experience when I pick up some of my favorite, you know, works of fantasy as well.
What about nonfiction? Does it apply to nonfiction or is it unique to fantasy? To me, it's unique to fantasy, but I don't know why.
I will say that there is some nonfiction that absolutely can do a good job of that. There are books that I've read in the past. I think one such example is like The Hiding Place. I don't know if y'all have ever read that. It's about someone who was a true story of what Corrie ten Boom, I believe, was the woman who wrote it and the story was about. She was a survivor of the Holocaust. And there was just a lot that she wrote that was obviously very inspiring about a true story. It was, you know, very tragic and such, but still inspiring. Of course, those examples, I believe, exist in nonfiction. But fantasy, I feel like, is where you get to have fun and enjoyment to sit down and read. The Hiding Place, while it's a fantastic book, is not one that you want to sit down and just like always read, because it's very heartbreaking, of course.
That's a really good question about the nonfiction. There's definitely a lot of nonfiction that I've gotten a lot of things out of. So there absolutely is an element of the self-discovery and the learning and the applying it to your life that you get out of nonfiction. But I think here comes the Tolkien deep dive. So strap in, everybody. Tolkien talks about this in his essay on fairy stories, which if you are a fan of fantasy in any aspect, I highly recommend looking up on fairy stories. You can just Google it and get a PDF version of it from Tolkien. It's a bit lengthy and it's a bit wordy. He's a professor of English at Oxford and Cambridge. So he gets a little deep with some of the thoughts, but the takeaways are really cool in that he lays out some of the elements of fantasy, of what he calls fairy story, which I think is very equivalent to the fantasy that we read today, of why it's so unique. And he talks about things like the imagination and the immersion that comes with fantasy. A fantasy story can suck you in such that you are all in. You are, what does he call it? Help me with this. Secondary belief is his term, right?
Oh yeah. I haven't heard that term in a while.
Yeah, he talks about, you know, he never liked the term suspension of disbelief, where you kind of pretend like the rules of the fantasy world are correct, even though you know they're not. He kind of takes it to another level and says a true fairy story, it sucks you all the way in, such that you have this secondary belief that you know it's not the primary world, but you are fully bought in the magic and the wonder of this secondary world. And it's stuff like that that I think kind of gets our full attention. It really brings us to the story on all levels. It gets our imagination firing. It gets our curiosity going in a lot of ways that a nonfiction doesn't quite like magnetically pull in your interest quite as much, at least for a lot of people.
I did my high school senior thesis on fairy stories, on fairy stories. And if I remember right, and it's been a while, I believe Tolkien even argues that if you're a fantasy author and you don't succeed in secondary belief, if your reader isn't fully immersed, then you're unsuccessful. It doesn't matter what your underlying message is. if you ever as a author haven't pulled your reader in to secondary belief, then you have failed as a fantasy author. You might as well be doing philosophy. So Tolkien makes the contention that you need to be, if you're going to write fantasy, you need to write fantasy first, and then you can put your philosophy in there if you want. But he gets a little contentious in there, if I remember right.
I know Sanderson is, my understanding is he's very like, I wrote the story, whatever meaning you apply to it is whatever you've applied to it, philosophy. I may be thinking of Hoyd specifically, actually. But what I was going to say is that Sanderson does a really wonderful job of that, of sucking you in and making you very much like that, if we're calling it secondary belief, if that was the term, that kind of secondary belief of like following along through the magic and everything. There's some things which you could probably question, but you know, you roll with it really, really well.
There's another element of the fantasy, that the story side of things that Tolkien ties directly to his own personal beliefs on like heaven and eternity, which has really stuck with me throughout the years. I'll actually read a little section of a letter that J.R.R. Tolkien wrote to his son, Michael Tolkien, while he was in military college. Michael Tolkien was in military college. And this is, let's see, this is 1941. So World War II is kind of spinning up here. And there's a lot of, I think, fear going around. And Tolkien's writing to kind of reassure and inspire his young son. And here's what he says. Let us both take heart of hope and faith. The link between father and son is not only of the perishable flesh. It must have something of eternitas about it. There's a place called heaven where the good here unfinished is completed, and where the stories unwritten and the hopes unfulfilled are continued. And that thought has really kind of inspired and stuck with me. Tolkien talks about this in other places as well, in some of his other works, of that the stories that really inspire us are ones that reflect the true story. They are elements. They are small pieces of a grander story, which is a real one, which is one that we're living in. And when there's bits and elements that we take out of these different stories, they are kind of pointing us to this grander story that when we get to heaven, when we move on to the next life after death, we'll get to see kind of what some of that bigger picture is, and we'll get to see where those different elements all fit together, which I think is a really, really encouraging and very hopeful thought for me. You did mention this earlier, Paul. I wanted to maybe build on it a little bit more, which was the virtue side of things, of the kind of what do I take out of a fantasy story and apply to my life in the real world, which can be like a spiritual question and also not necessarily at the same time. You know, you could probably tell me, oh, I don't need to get religious to learn a lesson from a character in a story. And I think that's true, but I think there's some kind of overarching virtues that we can get out of a story, in the sense that when I read a fantasy story, I learn lessons that I don't know that I ever would in real life. I get to see characters face situations and have to make decisions. I think, Trevor, you were talking about this a little bit ago, that really make me think, whereas my day-to-day life, where I'm maybe just, you know, fighting the battles of trying to get breakfast for my kids on time and trying to get to work without getting too frustrated in traffic, you know, I'm going to learn lessons from those too. But watching Dalinar face down an evil unmade and have to make a life-defining choice where he takes responsibility for terrible things that he's done, like that inspires me on a level that nothing else I've really experienced does. And the virtues that kind of become the inspiration for me out of that are an experience I've not found elsewhere.
I'm really glad you put that last bit on there. Okay, I'm going to get on a soapbox. Have I been asked this on the podcast before, of how have I Yeah, I have. Elliot, you mentioned this. You've been surprised at how well Sanderson has hooked me in order to not read anything else. Like, I have not read Tolkien probably since 2020, maybe 2021 was the last time I read Tolkien. If I'm reading something that does not improve me as a person, I feel like I'm wasting my time. So whether that be Sanderson or Tolkien, both do that extremely well. But when I get recommendations at Dragonsteel 2024 or in our comment section or in our Discord of other authors that I should read, whether that be Red Rising or Sword of Kagan or, you know, other, I'm sure they're great fantasy books and fantasy stories, fantasy authors. I find it really hard to open up a book of another author if I don't feel like I'm going to improve myself by reading it. And when you have Dalinar at the end of Oathbringer taking responsibility for what he's done, he accepts his pain, and then there's power in the magic system that he does that. That is so cool. That is so cool to craft a world that Sanderson has done where virtue has power in the world, where Kaladin accepts that going back for Dalinar with his bridge is the correct thing to do, even though he's been burned before. And he understands, I still need to do this anyway. That is so much different than anything else I've read outside of Sanderson, that I feel like I'm wasting time on anything else. I don't know if that's true because I don't read anything else, but that's how I feel. I feel like I would be wasting time with other authors if they don't hit that level of incredible virtue.
Yeah, I think that's pretty well said, Trevor. I think a lot of my journey and our journey as Christians is, you know, in a way you can compare it to like the hero's journey. I mean, accepting Christ means taking the road less traveled by is the biblical quote for you there. But meaning you're willingly taking on a higher set of standards, a separate path from what's typically going on around you. It means you'll face persecution, but hope and understanding, you kind of gain and learn hope and understanding that you are working towards something greater. We talk about the virtues that we see. A lot of that is entwined in it, both like the biblical fruit of the spirit that you hear, goodness, kindness, gentleness, patience. I can't actually run through the whole list off the top of my head, but there's a lot of them and they're wonderful. But that and the things that we learn, an example that comes to my mind, some of maybe the lesser talked about. Yeah, we see a lot of courage. We see a lot of hope. We see a lot of maybe kindness between characters and definitely unkindness. But some things like gentleness and patience as a fruit of the spirit, I think largely of like Gandalf. I think is a good example. And okay, I'm going to get really, really Tolkien deep dive here. Okay, so Gandalf is one of the Maiar who served under one of the Valar, Nienna, right? Nienna was the Valar of, I don't actually remember the specific title, like Mercy or, I think there were a couple of words that were used to describe her, like
pity gets used a lot.
Pity, that's right. Pity, sorrow, mercy, things like that. So your like first age drama is Morgoth, the big bad, was captured and defeated. But it was largely due to Nienna's pity that Morgoth was freed, which was not necessarily a good thing. However, okay, fast forward years and years and years. Gandalf is in the Fellowship, the story that most people know, the Lord of the Rings. He sort of learned from her and kind of gained a lot of those traits of caring and pity and sorrow for others, which I think was largely helpful with him, with Gandalf's, like, you know, there's the classic quote from Lord of the Rings of Frodo saying it was a pity Bilbo didn't kill Gollum when he had the chance. Gandalf says it was pity that stayed Bilbo's hand. And that notion of kind of a gentleness, if you will, ultimately being used for good and used in a special way. That's really like deep dive, convoluted. Definitely read the stories yourself. But there's things like that you get to see and pick up on, which I think are really special. Like that was my really long, convoluted talk. But I think characters like Gandalf, and there are many others who exemplify a lot of great things. Self-control, that's of course a primary theme in Lord of the Rings. It's almost like the main one for a lot of our protagonists. But things like that I think are really special and things you get to learn about in a really fun way. Like, it's really engaging and exciting and fun to learn those things and to read those stories.
There's a Bible verse that sums up for me kind of what I can get out of story and fantasy when it comes to the virtues and, you know, improving myself. It's in Philippians 4:8. It says this: "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, think about these things. As for the things you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you." Like, I've seen other translations too that use the phrase like "dwell on these things." And for me, like, fantasy helps me do that. When I read a story about heroes that are doing things of honor and right and excellence, like that makes me think about those things. I go the whole weekend, you know, and I can't get out of my head the fact that Dalinar just gave up his shard blade to buy a bunch of slaves that he doesn't even really know. And that act of, you know, just dwelling on that, of having that stuck in my head for a weekend or more, for me, feels like I'm kind of following that instruction there from Philippians to put my mind on those things, to practice those things, and God will be with me. That's kind of one of those moments, I think, where my religion and my pastimes collide a little bit.
I have a very similar in theme quote as well, actually, which I'll read very, very quickly here. It's in 2 Peter. Verse 5-8, it says, "For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue," there's our key word, "with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control, and self-control with steadfastness, and steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. For if these qualities are yours and increasing, they keep you from being ineffective or unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ." That's my cap, if you will, to the importance. It's important. It's fun to read the fantasy stories and to learn about these. But where I take that is implementing, you're trying to practically implement those in life, is frankly just a great practice that is rooted in godliness. With that, one thing I really wanted to talk about, we can, is Elliot, you wrote in our outline about eucatastrophe.
Yes.
And this is something that I think is an excellent example. I don't know if you or if Trevor wanted to intro eucatastrophe.
Trevor's the one that wrote the thesis paper on it, so I feel like we should pull him in for this part.
That's fair.
It's true.
We'll see how much he remembers.
Yeah, okay, here we go. So, quick definition, eucatastrophe, for anyone who doesn't know, I believe we've mentioned it on the podcast a couple times before, is you put your heroes in such a dire situation and then the opposite of a catastrophe happens. It looks like there is no clear way out for the good guys, and then a miracle happens. And I use the term miracle very specifically because Tolkien used the term miracle very specifically. That he Tolkien invented the term, I think.
He did, yes.
Specifically about having such a dire situation and then something pulls you out of it. The nativity story of Jesus coming and surrendering himself for all of mankind is your example 1A of what Tolkien would say as a eucatastrophe. There seems to be no solution, no redemption, and a miracle happens. So Tolkien tries to successfully put his heroes in such situations in his books, where the eagles is what comes up for a lot of people for this, where it seems like there's no way out for Gandalf and Thorin out of the frying pan and into the fire, and we're hosed. But then the eagles come and save the company in The Hobbit. I don't know. There's my definition of eucatastrophe. Do you guys want to pass this somewhere?
Yeah, no. You said it very well, Trevor. It's that, and I. Well, those are some of the best moments in film and on page. Like, those are just awesome moments. And I love that it is directly connected to the story of salvation in the real world, and then we get to see fun examples as well. Elliot, I think you had a quote which I thought was pretty good. I don't know if this might not count as eucatastrophe, but more of hope. But I think you had written about Sam, like a quote from Sam in The Lord of the Rings. Yes. Which I think counts, but some people would probably maybe not think it counts. But I think eucatastrophe, at least in my head, could count maybe as like a completely down, but almost like a moment of inspiration or motivation that's given to you. Essentially, the strength being given to you. If Elliot knows what quote, if you know what quote I'm talking about, I'll let you read it before I say too much.
I do have it. This is, I think, my favorite quote from the entirety of The Lord of the Rings. It's a powerful, powerful moment. And you're absolutely right. It ties into eucatastrophe for me completely, because the core of eucatastrophe is this idea of the unquenchable hope. And I know we've talked about that on the podcast before, because it's something that's very passionate in my mind, and you guys, I know, feel strongly about it too. So we've brought it up a lot, because it's also a theme that you see throughout the Stormlight Archive as well, and Branton's other works. Elantris actually has a ton of references and themes of hope as well.
Can I say something real quick?
Please.
That's what does it for me at the end of The Way of Kings. Not only does Sanderson do it once with Kaladin running back with the bridge, but then he flips it and Dalinar does it for Kaladin with the sword. Oh,
yep.
Fabulous.
Such a great moment.
But it's those moments where the characters discover that there is hope, that even in the face of evil and destruction and absolute catastrophe, there is an intervention of the divine. Or at least, you know, that element of, oh my goodness, we're saved. And there's a brief glimpse of this in The Return of the King. It's not a eucatastrophe moment, but it's absolutely, it's leading into the eucatastrophe moment, because it's the glimpse of hope. And to kind of explain what's happening here, this is Frodo and Sam. They're in Mordor. They've gotten past Shelob, spoilers. And they're into Mordor. They're feeling at their lowest that they've ever felt. They're running out of water. They're running out of food. They're realizing that they're not going to have enough for the return journey. The orcs have just like beat them up, and they're kind of at their last gasp. They're not even sure if they're going to make it. And Frodo is like in a stupor at this point. He is almost completely overwhelmed by the ring. He's just like stumbling on as best he can. and Sam is trying to keep him on his feet. He's trying to drag his master along the way. He ultimately ends up carrying him, of course, in the iconic scene, but that's not quite yet. And here's a moment for Sam. We're in Sam's perspective. Far above the Ethel Duath in the west, the night sky was still dim and pale. There, peeping among the cloud rack, above a dark tor high up in the mountains, Sam saw a white star twinkle for a while. The beauty of it smote his heart as he looked up out of the forsaken land, and hope returned for him. For like a shaft clear and cold, the thought pierced him that in the end the shadow was only a small and passing thing. There was a light and high beauty forever beyond its reach. And that passage is it's so stark because the chapter all around it is so heavy and dark and bleak. And then there's just this moment where he sees the star. And the chapter doesn't say it, but a lot of people kind of put the connection that this is Eärendil, that this is the morning star. And
Elrond's dad?
Yes.
Yep. Elrond's dad.
Yep. And yeah. And just that realization that the light is stronger than the dark, and that the dark will at some point end and the light return, is just so inspiring. Like that hits me in my soul, in the deepest core of my being. And there's other scenes too that make me feel that feeling as well. Maybe the one I think of the most is like the dog and the dragon, where Hoyt is feeding that hope back to Kaladin and saying, it feels like you're in the worst of the worst times right now, but you will be warm again. It's just like, oh man, you can just feel the life like rush into you when you experience that moment with Kaladin or with Sam.
Reading moments like that and keeping them in my head like constantly gives me the courage and the confidence to do the right thing in my own life. Even if it's a small thing, knowing the truth that good will triumph over evil gives me confidence that I should do what is right, even if I don't feel confident in the outcome, I can feel confident in the action.
Absolutely. And there's, yeah. Ooh, there's a Silmarillion quote that we absolutely have to mention here, or I will beat myself later. Paul, I know you love this moment too, so you should take this one.
I was definitely thinking it. And Elliot, if I drop anything, definitely feel free to chime in. So this is one, and I'm really confident that I'm talking about the right one, because I know we've talked about this before. This one is different. I would say this is different from a you catastrophe. You know, while there are these moments of you catastrophe where a miracle saves our characters in this story, right? It does not always end pretty, and there can still be hope. The example that we're referring to, and a quote, if you're in our Discord, you may have seen this as my status on Discord, like under my name for a long time now. But in the First Age, Silmarillion story, the story of Húrin, if you've read The Children of Húrin, that book, aside from the Silmarillion, then you've read this as well. Húrin is in the Nir Naiath Ar-Noediad. That's your mouthful word for you, which is the Battle of Unnumbered Tears in the First Age. And this is, it's just the biggest war you could imagine. It's absolutely gruesome. So many die. It's so filled with grim death, defeat, total. It's atrocious. And it's led by Morgoth. Right, the adversaries are led by Morgoth, and Húrin, who's leading the men. There's men and elves united. While Húrin knows that not this day they will leave necessarily victorious, he knows that victory will come, regardless of my life. Even though it's horrible at that moment, he's watching people die around him. He even later goes on to be tormented by Morgoth himself. He says, "Aure intuluva," which means day shall come again. And he knows that even though the night, the darkness is so strong at this moment, he knows day shall come again. And I got chills even just like talking through this scene, because that is so true. In real life, you know, there's moments and times when you're at the bottom and life just feels so dark. But we know that through Christ, day shall come again. There shall be a day when death is defeated, and things like, and that whole aspect. And that is easily one of the best moments in Tolkien's writing, in my opinion, is that of so grim, so dark. Everything is wrong. Everything is dark, and death is everywhere. He still has the wisdom and the hope to say, day shall come again, Aura into Luva. And it's his battle cry too. His battle cry, he's inspired, he's riled up, and he's doing all he can. He kills tons of orcs, goes out in a blaze of glory. It's fantastic. If you haven't read the Silmarillion already, or at least the Children of Húrin, you need to go read that. It's a tragic story, but it is magnificent. It's wonderful.
Well, I got tingles going up and down my spine just hearing you read that and talk about that. That was so well said, and such a core part of like who I am. That concept that day shall come again. And you said it. Jesus is that day for me. Jesus is that light at the other side of whatever it is that I'm going through. And I feel like I can get through absolutely anything, knowing that, even something, you know, atrocious as an entire army of orcs bearing down. Is he fighting like Balrogs at the same time in there as well? I forget which battle the Balrogs are in.
I think I'm not certain, actually. My brain is telling me yes, but whenever I read it, I think I was disappointed that there weren't Balrogs and dragons at this war, but there may have been. You can't quote me on that. Either way, it's horrible. It does not go well for them. I know that much.
Isn't Gothmog? Gothmog is the like the Lord of the Balrogs.
Yes.
Yeah. There are definitely Balrogs in this scene. Okay. I have it here.
I do know that much.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, do y'all have any other points you want to share? If not, I'm gonna kind of land our plane.
Sanderson has a version of that quote, which I'm gonna read. Sanderson, it's not actually in a book. It's in an essay. He has to write a whole essay to get to this last two sentences in long-winded Sanderson fashion. But Sanderson's version of that sentiment is, when you find yourself in the cold, know that sometimes there's a purpose to it. Trust me, I've been there. I might be there right now, feeling the cold on my cheeks, but these days no longer in my bones, knowing that this will pass, and that it might be for my good. Most of all, looking up so I can appreciate it, the still, solemn perspective of one who stands outside. That's from his essay, Outside.
Yeah. I remember you had us make a video on that, of us reading parts of that essay. That was really fun.
I did, for our art piece.
Yeah. Okay, so with this, first, the one thing I wanted to close with is a song, actually. I'm not actually going to sing the song, but I'm going to read you.
Sing the song.
Yeah. but I want to say before that, anyone who's listened all the way through this, our recording time says 56 minutes. I know it hasn't, that the total video won't be this long, but if you've listened to us for 45 plus minutes, first off, thank you. We appreciate it. If you have thoughts, agreeing or disagreeing, you're welcome to let us know. If you want to join our Discord, I'm always happy to talk about faith or fantasy. Of course, that's what we do already talk about in our Discord. Anything like that, feel free to reach out.
Please.
It's something very important to us. I also want to just kind of, as we close, take a moment to kind of think a little bit about the moments that happen in the Christmas story, the nativity story. So the song that I'm talking about, it's a song written by Francesca Battistelli. I think I said her name right. And it's she wrote this song as if it was Mary essentially singing to Jesus, to baby Jesus. And I think it's a neat way to allow some perspective, because you read the story and you see, okay, Mary and Joseph arrived and they had baby Jesus and the wise men brought him gifts and they were livestock. And it's easy to kind of gloss through that, but to imagine the situation that she was in with the angels appearing, telling her that she would have the savior of the world, right? So this is very short in note, but think of this as if you're Mary in that moment. It says, I don't know what to say when I look in your eyes. You made the world before I was born, but here I am holding you in my arms tonight. You're here. I'm holding you so near. I'm staring into the face of my Savior, King, and Creator. You could have left us on our own, but you're here. And I just think that's a beautiful synopsis of, you know, we did not deserve anything ourselves. We did not deserve salvation, but we were given it at a massive price, but it's something that we were given. I just think that's really beautifully said. So, aside from that, Merry Christmas to everybody. Yeah, that's all I have.
Yeah, echo Paul's thoughts there on thank you. Would love to talk with any of all of you guys further. And yeah, just to bring it home here, I would say a heartfelt God bless you to absolutely everybody.
Yeah, appreciate you both, Paul and Elliot, and anyone who is listening. Thanks, guys. See you on Tuesday next week.
See you next time.
See ya.